Welcome to the Inspiro Podcast, a podcast exploring personal growth, leadership, strategy, communication, and fulfillment. We are your hosts, Jason Luchterfeld and Bill Woodburn. I'm here as a dentist, transitioning into a career to help facilitate individuals and their organizations towards a more fulfilling future.
Hi there, I'm Bill Woodburn, and I'm a licensed professional counselor and licensed marriage and family therapist in Austin, Texas. I'm fascinated by the way people come together to solve problems, whether that's couples or families, dental practices or organizations. We're going to be exploring a lot of topics, and for us to be able to be free to do that, I have to let you know that this is not intended to be dental advice or counseling advice.
Moving into losing the future with that person or thing or pet, I think this relates. So one thing I experienced was the day after, I no longer had to take care of that dog.
Yeah.
It had gotten to a point where there was a lot of care in, required to, you know, help him outside, to go on these walks that were super, super slow. And is he okay? Is he stumbling? Like, careful on stairs. And so that level of attention several times a day, every day, even for a dog, was something that I noticed was gone. And initially it was a loss. My care for this thing is no longer needed. And so it actually made me think about my mom. So I lost my grandparents a couple of years ago, which was very difficult for my mom. It was her parents. And so it immediately made me think of her and how much caretaking she was doing that she likely got some value from.
Yes.
That was now gone. And it made that potential impact on her a lot more real to me than it was back then. So it's not just that we don't have the future with that person or that thing, which I think is also a value, but it's the type of future or what's missing from that future that we may have not realized was such a woven in part of our lives.
Sure. And we stumble across it.
Yeah.
Like so many people who've lost a pet will say, you know, I reminded myself that, you know, it was time for their walk and then realized, oh, I won't be walking them again.
Right.
But the reminder is still there. I had someone who was saying that they would remember that they needed to take their dog for a walk because that was the time. And then remember that they no longer needed to take their dog for a walk. And there was that little moment of their life readjusting itself. But there was a little bit of pain in that readjustment. It's like, oh, I used to do this, now I do that. And the reason is a little painful.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a pretty potent piece. We talk a lot about purpose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we lose purpose, that, from my understanding, that's the biggest problem with retirement. Is that people mm-hmm. lose that daily purpose. And, you know, caring for something or someone is also a huge purpose for some people. And if that's gone, now what? Now who am I?
Yes.
Now what do I do?
And I think that caring for others is a very important innate human activity. And there's this, occasionally people have, you know, I'm going to retire, you know, the kids are gone. I'm not going to care about this. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to go off and play golf. It's like, no, you need something to take care of because that's the way we're built. And, you know, at least wash your car or something. This idea that you're no longer going to have to care for. Yeah, you're right. That's dangerous. That flies in the face of what we know about people.
So in those instances, some people will get a new pet.
Yeah.
Some people, as you just advised, you know, a great place to focus is caring for yourself.
Yes.
And you know, put yourself as a priority for once and do some things to really figure out what you need. and do those things. And that can be as simple as we hear in, who was it that wrote a book? Stanley McChrystal, I think, something like that, wrote a book called The Make Your Bed. And he talks about getting up at 4 a.m. and making your bed every morning as a way to start the day with purpose. Mm-hmm. It can be as simple as that, to just get things going. Wash your car, whatever it might be.
Yes. Yeah. We have to have purpose. And I think one of the most potent purposes we have is taking care of people or taking care of a thing that is important to us. One of the ways this grief process works, one of the ways we work around grief, is memorializing. We want to memorialize that thing that is lost in such a way that while we know we've lost that unique thing, we still have that larger connection thing. Mm-hmm. Many, many years ago, I was in Washington, D.C., and of course I went to the Vietnam Wall, see the names. Got a few friends on that wall. I wanted to visit. And right next to it is this marvelous sculpture of nurses, military nurses. And it's got three of them. One's caring for a wounded man, and one is, you know, helping, and the other is looking like she's looking for the choppers coming in. And it's just this powerful and moving piece that really memorializes something. And I was talking to the ranger who's there, and he says, you know, it's the weirdest thing. There's almost never a day where there aren't flowers being put on that statue. And I thought, yeah, that's a way to memorialize. It's a thank you, but it's also, I remember, it's also, I'm grieving. It's also, I mean, it's complicated and yet so simple. I come from a small town, and there was that day in the spring where people went out to the cemetery and cleaned up the cemetery and then had a barbecue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that's what we do. We're remembering, we're memorializing, we're connecting with, it helps.
Yeah, so culturally, that would be interesting to explore. I don't know much about other cultures and how they handle loss, other than what I've read in like some social psychology history books about tribes that would send their dead off on a raft on the river or something, and different ways of celebrating a life. You know, we have a lot of cemeteries here. Cremation is now more popular, and having an urn and whatnot that displays that. There are a number of places around. Well, you see it whenever there's like a bad car accident. People will put something up where that accident was to memorialize a loved one.
Or there's flags that have mast that you go around, and it's like, oh yes, this is saying that something of significance happened.
Yeah. Speaking of that, about 10 days after putting my dog down, I received something in the mail from the vet. They had taken a print of his paw on paper and his nose. And so I have these two pieces of paper with a little card that everybody at the vet signed saying, thinking of you, here are these things. And so that was a really nice, surprising memorial to get of him.
I think we could learn a lot about how to help people through grief from veterinarian's office, from those really well run, you know, that give you some privacy and help you make it meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nicely done. Any experience with other cultures, especially being where you are in Texas?
Oh, absolutely. It's we have the Day of the Dead celebration here, which is big in Mexico, but is big in Texas. And sometimes people who are not used to it, that seems very ghoulish. I mean, they're all sorts of like skeletons and stuff. It's like, no, this is not a horror movie. This is about remembering people that have passed. Sometimes even long ago ancestors, it can be, you know, family members. And there is going, you know, going to the cemetery, and there is bringing food for the deceased, you know, or pouring out their favorite beer, or, you know, and everybody's like, that seems strange. To me, of course, I grew up here, but that does not seem strange. There is something to do about it. And I think one is memorial, and that's important, but the other, particularly death, that kind of loss, there's so little to do about it. We need something to do. To bury them, to put up a headstone, to go out to the cemetery, to bring food, to bring flowers. It's like, good, there's something I can do in the face of this thing where there's nothing I can do about it. I'd like there to be something I could do. I think that's an important piece.
Yeah, that just having an action to undertake would be somewhat therapeutic.
Yes. Yeah. And I used to, you know, when I was much younger, again, I grew up in a small town where manners were important. Civility, politeness, doing the right thing was very important. And I used to chafe against that. It's like, oh, come on. You know, no. Yeah, as I've gotten older, ooh, I've realized what a wonderful instruction manual that was. That when somebody's elderly parent dies, and I maybe don't know them all that well, and what do? Oh, you get a condolence card. You send flowers. You write those phrases that everybody knows. But suddenly become important. It's like, oh, good. Oh, no, there's something for me to do to help here. I know what to do. I don't just have to make this up. Because it's really complicated sometimes to support people who are going through the grief process. And so we have these well-recognized ways to do it. And I actually, I've stopped resisting this. I think those are important and beneficial. You know, to stop and, you know, when you meet them and say, you know, I'm so sorry about your loss or whatever. And you can say, well, that's that cliche phrase. I don't know. I've been on the receiving end of that. And it's like, no, I appreciate that. And I've also been on the sending end of that, appreciating that I had something to say in a complex situation that I don't know what to say.
Thanks again for listening in. Next episode, we'll have a bit on supporting others through loss. So check that out in a week or so.